This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 540, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
There's a girl that you might know. She's a friend, at least I tell you so. But it might surprise you to find there's something going on behind the door.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 540. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And that's it. I don't even know where Josh is.
All we got was a vague message on Monday, yo, I'm out. And that was it.
So normally we know, okay, he's traveling. Or I don't even know why he's not on the show this week.
I don't know why. Yeah, it's just him. So
I think he got sick of rating those DC books.
Ratings. Well, he picked a good week to skip. So, so no Josh. So just you and I. I will try to fill in the role of the second Jamoke.
I feel like, well, it might need to be jabronis or something because we're different. It's a different grouping. We'll figure it out. We are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book as well as other books that came out. We'll do some listener mail in a week. We don't normally do ratings, although we only have one rating book this week. So maybe we'll get some listener mail in there. No promises. And spoiler warning, that's it. There's spoiler warning. Ron, you had the pick this week, the controversial pick. I saw lots of grumbling on social media about it.
I don't know how it could be controversial when it's my pick.
It's exactly.
It's not
your pick. It's mine.
It's not a community pick. It's not a let me ask everyone what their favorite book was. No, it's what was my favorite book. And the pick of the week was I Hate Fairyland number 6. This is the brainchild of writer and artist Scotty Young, and with color by Jean-Francois Bilou. And so we talked about it previously on the show in the first story arc, the first 5 issues of I Hate Fairyland. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was, we talked. It's funny because I know it's coming back to back with Grizzly Shark, with that as the pick. And this falls under that same kind of umbrella of a book where the creator is having a ton of fun and you can tell.
And humor,
yeah, exactly. But also just like, Scotty flexing his creativity muscles and like creating this whole world and these characters and this ridiculousness or whatever. And every page just oozes with so much fun. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt for the first 5 issues. But I'll be honest, at the end of the 5th issue, I was like, okay, he told his little story and there we go. Right? and then when the news broke that he was going to keep doing it, I was like, oh, that was an interesting choice. And so here we are, which is the first issue of the new arc. And for those who read the first arc, it ended with Gertie, the main character, killing the Queen of Fairyland and taking her mantle and becoming the Queen of Fairyland. And so that's where we pick up things, where Gert is the Queen of Fairyland. And as I started reading this issue, I was like, all right, I cannot wait to see where he goes with this. And what we get is we get a great action-packed opening, and it's like a coliseum, and there's, you know, there's you know, kind of Roman kind of gladiatorial fight in between a cute little fuzzy pink thing and a big scary green thing, and the cute fuzzy pink thing wins. And then we see Queen Gertrude, and she has filled out. She's got big boobs, and she's all grown up.
How is she aging?
Yeah, exactly. That was why I was like, oh wow, we're really jumping here or whatever. And then turns out this is all a daydream. Gert is still a young little girl, and she is mired in the bureaucracy of running a kingdom, where all she does is sign paperwork, and it's really boring. And then what we then do is he kind of fast forwards through. She finds out that as queen, she doesn't really get to do anything. She tells people what to do, but that's it. And so she decides to go off for a year and do her queen like duties, which ultimately end in disaster every time, and for some reason end up with an explosion, which was a very funny gag that went throughout the whole book. And so then finally the book gets towards the end, and turns out after a year of her reign, she is so broken down and had it, she's locked herself in the throne room, where she has been peeing in bottles a la Howard Hughes.
Nice.
Which was something that I thoroughly, like, when I saw that, I was like, is he? No.
Good Howard Hughes joke.
Exactly. Love a good Howard Hughes joke. Even when it's just vaguely referred to with the bottles of pee.
Right.
But she encounters the head of HR for the kingdom, and they decide to lay her off from being the queen. And the issue ends with her going back on the road and to wreak havoc in Fairyland.
Can you lay a queen off?
Well, it's funny because I had picked this to be pick of the week before Scotty Young went to Twitter to remind us of the book.
Yeah, you got lobbied on Twitter a little bit.
But the thing was, and normally that's a no-no, and Scotty should know better. He really should know better. But luckily I had already read this, and I already loved it and cackled and cracked up. And the reason why Scotty had lobbied on Twitter was because if you read his last page kind of wrap-up of this, he explains this whole issue as he basically goodwifed us.
Talk about playing to your audience. All right.
Exactly, which is thoroughly true in this issue. He says, end the season with a big status quo changing plot twist, only to come back to the next season and be like, nope. And so that's basically what he did, was that, he put her in this position as queen. We got a little time of her, but he, in doing his own book, and you could see that. You could see the point where he's like, okay, I'm going to make her queen, and be like, well, that's boring. I want to have fun. Let me go do this.
Right.
And it's that freedom that he's utilizing that makes this book just feel so much fun and so full of energy. And I've got to say, this issue might have looked the best out of all the six so far.
Wow.
I think so. Wow. At least I think so. I think there were a couple of great big double page spreads of in the middle of when she was going through the kingdom and seeing different creatures and things like that. The colors are the balance between him and Jean-Francois Billeau, who they've worked together before, but they work really well together. It just every point hit its note correctly. And in a week where there's a whole lot of stuff going on, real heavy stuff at Marvel and DC and things like that, this is the one that I laughed out loud a couple of times, and how can you ignore that?
Is so he's going ongoing with this then?
Yeah, he's going ongoing. So good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. If it sells, it's great. And I could see that. Like, this is and the thing is that this is it's a very violent book, but there's no cursing. There's no, I would buy this for my nieces.
Would your sister be happy about that?
What she doesn't know won't hurt her.
Well, I might check this out. We talked about the first couple. I read the first two. The tone is for me, and the main character for me, were very exhausting.
Yes.
It's the same fear I have for The Fix, which also has a sort of similar manic tone to it.
Yep.
And I tend to get really burnt out on those books really quickly, so I didn't read 3, 4, or 5, but I like The Good Wife.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So there's a connection for you there. Well, the thing was with the first arc, which the first arc I thought was really good, but over the five issues, it got a bit redundant in terms of what was going on, what the thing was. And we came to a conclusion, and it ended that season with, okay, she's queen. And like I said before, I was really curious, okay, if he's going to keep doing this, what's he going to do with it? Where is he going to go with it? And it's interesting to see somebody work through, working in solitude by themselves, truly cartooning, writing and drawing it, and having an idea and a plan at the start of the book and ending up in a completely different place because the characters take them there. I think that's fun to watch. So You know, and so a part of it is, you know, kind of celebrating the freedom or the work that Scotty's been doing with this book. But then also, like, I mean, it's got to look good. It's got to – I mean, like, I don't take the pick of the week lightly, people.
No, we never, you know, do.
And there's some of these – in the middle of the book, I'm just flipping through it now, and there are these double-page spreads of her kind of you know, venturing through the kingdom, you know, and you see there was an assassination attempt by a warlock, and then a, you know, a an attack from farm lords who were upset that she was eating them. They're all pigs and she's eating ribs. You know, like, they're just the imagination, you know, and the thing was, is that it definitely still has that manic energy. I don't think as much in the first arc, so I would recommend you take a look at it.
Right.
But it still has that kind of crazy, you know, this is a crazy, crazy world that it's existing in. And it, what was going back to the Howard Hughes gag is that the buildup for that is that there's a wheelbarrow full of bottles and all the bottles have faces and they're talking about how the queen is losing it and how it's best to stay away from her. And then they find out they're going to the queen's throne room and they freak out and then they realize that what they're being used for. And all the bottles are screaming, saying, no. And at one point, when the HR woman comes and she's explaining herself, and she holds up the bottle full of her own pee, and the bottle just help me, please, and it's all yellow tinted. Like, it's just there are a lot of good visual gags, a lot of good writing gags, and it's just fun. And I want to see where we go from here, you know, especially after good wifing us.
All right, well,
so I applaud his inspiration. So good job, Mr. Young.
I Hate Fairyland number 6.
Yes, my pick of the week.
And the collection just came out of the first 5. So if this sounds like a book you want to read and you haven't heard us talk about it before, you can get caught up fairly easily.
Yeah, strongly recommend it. If anything, this is unfiltered Scotty Young art. If you like his covers for Marvel and things like that, this is him doing what he enjoys, which I think is
you rarely see better looking comics.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on to the ratings segment.
Ratings.
If you're new to the show, this is where we've been rating the DC Rebirth books. And I think this would have gone smoother had they all come out at once.
Yeah.
If they're going to trickle them out like this, it's going to be a weird show for about a month.
Well, the thing that annoys me is that we've had a pretty good – like, the first 2 weeks have been great because we've had a handful of books.
Yeah.
And then this week I got all excited to do ratings, and it's just one book.
One book. Just ratings. Weird. You still get the Rebirth books while those same characters are appearing in other ongoing books.
Yes.
But we'll talk about that.
Very odd.
So this week we're rating Titans Rebirth number 1
on ratings.
The PRR scale, which is pick a comic, read a comic, rate a comic, based on the mates per system.
From a 1 well 1 through 5 though.
On a 1 through 5 scale.
That's yeah, right. Yeah.
This is written by Dan Abnett with an art by Brett Booth, who are going to be the creative team on the ongoing Titans book starting next month.
Yep.
So we talked last week about how Flash was basically Rebirth Part 2. This feels like Rebirth Part 3, and that now Wally has moved over to find his old friends in the Titans wearing his new costume and has to explain the state of the world to them as they don't recognize him, much like Barry didn't. I liked a lot of this, but I think what this issue did is it's forced me to wrap my head around what this DC Rebirth actually means, because they're not going all the way back, despite the fact that in DC Rebirth, Wally was like, it's all wrong. We have the wrong costumes and we're too young and it's weird. Here, the weird thing was the flashbacks weren't to the old continuity, which...
No.
Didn't Wally come from the old continuity?
Yes.
So how is he having flashbacks to the New 52?
I don't know. I don't know, man.
This is the one where I was like, wait.
Well, like, you're the DC guy, so you know much more of this. Like, so like, here's the thing, is that, like, I'm a Flash guy.
Yeah.
I love the Flash. Specifically, I'm a Wally West guy. That's my Flash.
Right. Hashtag my Flash.
Not my Flash. Hashtag not my Flash. You know, even though I recognize Barry Allen's, you know, role in the Flash family and all that sort of stuff.
You came in through Wally.
I came in when Barry was – I came in at a time when dead characters stayed dead. I'm just saying.
God damn it.
God damn it. It was a simpler time. And through that, though, through reading The Flash and through reading Wally as The Flash, I learned of the Titans, you know, and for a while I read Titans books when they were out, and they were, you know, like, remember in the 2000s there was that run
Jeff
on Titans?
Jeff Johns did a great run. Yeah. Really great.
Yeah, I read that, really good. So I had an affinity for these characters, but a lot of these flashbacks, like, I didn't know if, like, I don't know any
this
of these
is all New 52.
Oh, jeez.
Which is bizarre, because so in the opening page, literally the first page, the splash page, is of the quote-unquote original Titans.
Yeah,
running, you know, to some adventure, and Wally's wearing his his old costume.
Kid Flash costume.
Yeah. Donna's wearing basically the old original Wonder Girl costume. We'll talk about Speedy's hat later, but he's basically wearing the red Arrow costume with a baseball hat. Aqualad's wearing some sort of Aquaman hybrid suit, and then Robin's in his dumbass New 52 original costume.
And who's the redhead in the dress?
She's
is that Raven?
She's an old Titans character they brought back. Who I'm not really. She's like from the 60s. I'm not really all that familiar with her. But the original group would not include the redhead girl or Speedy.
Yep.
And B, why are some costumes from the old continuity and some from the new? I thought Wally came back from the old continuity.
Yeah.
And so when he goes to jog their memories, we see flashbacks, but clearly it's not from the. And I get the whole point is that it's muddled, but I thought for Wally it wasn't muddled.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm kind of confused.
It's very confusing.
However, I enjoyed this.
I gotta say, I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah.
So much so, actually, like, it's funny because I've long been on the record as being a Brett Booth fan, only to get quiet about that over the past few years because there's not been a lot to be excited about for Brett Booth. But I thought not every page, but there are some pages of this that were solid.
Yeah. He can be hit or miss for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, the cover, I think, looks great.
Yes.
Like, the cover looks amazing. But, you know, there were a couple of pages where I was like, oh, man, this is the Brett Booth I like. This is the Brett Booth I remember. But then, of course, there were a couple of pages where it was just wonky and weird, as you would expect. But a lot of layouts were really good. Oh, the last page looked great, I thought, where it's Wally holding the picture, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed the heck out of this. I thought it was great. I thought it got me excited. I might read the Titans book.
And Dan Abnett, you know, he's been writing that Titans Hunt book, which I have been enjoying, despite it all being weird. But you know, he seems to have the character voices down, and there's some fun banter, and I really like the scene where he goes to meet, you know, he goes to jog Dick's memory, and that was a fun scene, because, you know, those two guys are, we're best friends, so that's an important relationship to get down.
And so basically, it seems as if Wally needs to touch them.
Or shock them
somehow, right. Yes. He's some power that shocks, and that wakes them up to it all. I could have done without the flashback of Wally and Aqualad fist bumping at the end. I could have done without that. But all in all, I thought it was enjoyable. I could have done without Roy Harper's entire visage.
Well, okay. I don't know why they are.
It's extreme Roy Harper.
He's a badass, Ron. And the reason you know that is because he wears his hat backwards.
Right, yes.
Not sure why he wears a baseball hat with his superhero outfit, because as someone who played a lot of baseball, if you get any kind of wind resistance under that bill, it's going to come flying off. So someone who jumps off buildings a lot or falls out of planes or whatever superheroes do, that hat's not staying on.
Yep.
It just looks dumb. It just looks really dumb. And
agreed.
Front, forward, back facing, doesn't matter. Either way, it's dumb. It doesn't make, any sense. However, I like this. This was fun. These are good characters. I like the original team. It's interesting that they're sticking sort of with the original team when everything else in them tells them to follow the cartoon lineup, which I guess is what – this is Titans, right? So there'll be Teen Titans, a book, and that's going to have like, you know, your more Starfire Changeling group. But this is the original Titans group, which is what I like. So I'm happy about that. I will read this more.
What do we think of Wally's new costume?
It's sad that he went with the designer that Barry uses that gave him all the extra lines.
But they're not there all the time.
No, they actually seem to be here the whole time.
Well, there are little lines and accents, but they only get super accentuated when the lightning thing was happening.
That's true, but they're still there, like on his legs.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's not as bad as Flash's, actually. It's very subtle.
It's kind of a hybrid of...
It's a hybrid of Flash and Kid
Flash. It's a hybrid of Kid Flash and Wally's costume after Barry came back. Do you remember that? Like the crimson-red costume?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had that belt that sort of points to his dick.
Yep. Yeah exactly. To Nightwing? Or?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, so ratings.
Ratings. I give it 3.5.
I'm going to give it 4.
Well, all right.
I'm going to give it 4 because I found myself liking Brett Booth more than I thought I would. So I'm going to give it 4. It was solid.
All right, and are you sticking with it?
I'm gonna stick with it for a little bit. Okay. I'm making a mistake here, but I'm gonna stick with it.
Well, you want Wally stories, right? This is where
I do want Wally stories. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no. But going back to what you're saying is that you don't know who or what when this is or whatnot. Going back to what we said originally, when this happens, it looks like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yes.
So yeah.
I kept wondering why he wasn't saying, in my memories, it's all wrong. We're all wearing this wrong. We're all too young. We're wearing the wrong costumes. Like, it's, yep. He should be holding up that photograph going, this never happened.
Yep.
So we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out indeed.
I'll have to wrap my brain around this. So now we're going to jump into four DC books came out this week. Four number ones off of the Rebirth issues from 2 weeks ago.
Okay. So we are not, for clarification, we are not rating the number one issues.
No, and we're also not going to always do them. It's just we wanted to talk about all four of them, so we decided to do them in a group.
Right.
First up, Batman number one from new Batman writer Tom King, art by David Finch. And okay. I don't know if you saw or heard, but Tom King did a little mini press tour this past week. He did Talksplode of our show with Josh, and he did our old iFanboy Paul's show, O Comics, where they both talked about the upcoming Batman work. And I was very excited because I think it was on Paul's show he described his take on Batman as basically bringing back the feel of the animated series.
Okay.
Scott Snyder's run acclaimed. We loved it. We all picked it multiple times. But it had a very specific Scott Snyder point of view on Batman.
Right.
And I wouldn't call it a traditional Batman
right.
point of view. Here, with Batman number one, this felt much more traditional Batman, but still in that same vein. And so for that reason, it felt like a breath of fresh air, which is maybe the wrong way to say it because that would imply that I didn't like Scott Snyder's run, which I did.
No, yeah, but it could be a breath of different air.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is a very simple story of a plane is crashing. And, you know, some criminals of the, it's Cobra, actually.
Cobra!
Stole Stinger missiles. And one of them wasn't recovered, and they shoot down a plane, and it's just Batman trying to save the plane. Very simple. No overarching story. Just one man against the elements. And I really liked it a lot.
Okay. I enjoyed this as well. I read it. So I gave it a shot. I read it. Mm-hmm. I liked it, although I did take umbrage with – so basically the whole premise of the issue, the whole thing is that a plane is going down over Gotham and Batman is working to save it, to steer the plane away from the city and that sort of thing. And I felt as if he threw in the towel a bit too early than Batman normally would, because at one point he's on the plane, he's putting little jets on the wings, and he's trying to steer the plane, and he's got Alfred back in the cave helping him, you know, with the jets and whatever. And then he starts telling Alfred, like, listen, I left notes for the Robins. Here's the code.
Yeah.
Do you think my parents would be proud? I'm like, this is the first issue.
Well, that's part of like. He still pulled it out. Well, he didn't really.
He didn't actually pull it out. That was the twist at the end. But the thing was, like it looks like he had it handled. Even if these two new characters didn't show up, like I just feel as if Batman doesn't throw in the towel this early.
I can see that.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you know.
It's sort of reminiscent of the end of Captain America when Steve's like just Steve, just jump out of the plane.
Exactly.
Or the end of Batman, even though I haven't thought about this movie in forever, into the Dark Knight Rises, same thing.
Yep.
I went with it because it sort of established this tone of the new Batman, and that they're bringing back the Batman family, which was shown in Detective Comics last week, but he's going to have all his characters around him again, and it wasn't quite as grim as before. I buy your premise. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, that just struck me odd. I was just when he started going into that, I was like, whoa, okay.
Listen, Alfred's got two hands. Okay.
I know.
So for me, you're already starting at a good point.
Fair enough. Yeah, you're blinded by Alfred being having two hands. What did you think? The big question, and unfortunately, Josh is missing on this. What did you think of Finch?
Finch is not normally my style, but I thought he did a fine job.
Yeah, I didn't think it was overly Finched.
Yeah, it wasn't as dark and shadowy as I've seen before from him. And he's done Batman work before, which is fine. It was good.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
All right, so stick. Also, I wanted to note on it that it featured. You know, I don't know if the Finch was less Finchy because he had an inker on it, but color by Jordy Belair, letters by John Workman.
Yeah, Tom King was able to choose his team.
Well done.
And he said, "I want Jordy and John Workman."
Good choices.
So I think this book's in good hands.
Cool. All right, so you're gonna stick with it.
We're not doing that, but yes.
I know. It's like to bother you.
Did you read Superman number one?
I did read Superman number one.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was charming. I thought it was delightful.
it's a very, it's not surprising because we've been building to this, but it's a new take on Superman.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Superman as Super Dad.
Yeah. I was most impressed, though, by Patrick Gleason.
Yes, his art looked really good.
Very Tim Sale-y at moments.
Yes.
You know, like, and not you know, in terms of ripping off or homaging, but just in terms of stylistically and, you know, kind of look in the way it balanced with the colors and the shadows and things like that. It was very, I was very impressed by Patrick Gleason's art.
Yes. As we talked about before, you know, New 52 Superman has died. Old 52 Superman, who snuck through in Convergence, has taken up the mantle. And the twist now is that, you know, in the intervening years of sneaking through, he and Lois had a kid.
Yep.
Who's now developing his own powers, which yep. he uses here, despite being told not to, and with very negative consequences. So this, I don't know what their plan is, but this feels like it's going to be a family book as much as it is going to be a superhero book.
Which I like. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool.
It's interesting, for sure. I mean, we didn't like it in the Superman Returns film, but what's interesting here is it's because they're living on a farm. They're not living in Metropolis, so it's sort of like Clark's become his dad, and now he's got to raise himself.
Which is weird.
While still being Superman. There's a very interesting sort of parallel story to him and his kid here. So that's kind of that's interesting. He's even got his own Lana Lang, who witnessed his using his powers.
Right.
And I liked – there was a scene in the beginning where – you know, Wonder Woman and Batman show up. And I'm still waiting for the scene where they're like, explain this to us again. Who are you?
Right.
But it was interesting because they both look really menacing. And I guess that's because it's from the kid's perspective. Like, there's one point where they both look up. They all look up at him and they have these creepy white eyes. But he's freaked out. So I totally get that. But this could be really good.
It was very good.
That scene at the very end. I don't know what I'm talking about. That was not that was not in the beginning.
It was not, yeah. I was very impressed by it.
Yeah, it was fun. So Green Arrow, number one. Green Arrow Rebirth was our pick. I think it was both of our picks. We both said it would have been our pick.
Yep.
What did you think of the first, quote-unquote, real issue?
I was kind of let down.
It wasn't as good as the Rebirth
issue. It wasn't as good as the Rebirth issue. I don't know if it was too dark. I felt as if it was, like, very dark. And I felt as if it had too much of the same stuff that I read in the New 52. Yeah, I don't know. There's something I don't know about it, but I read it. And I was disappointed. It was still good. Don't get me wrong. I still like Otto Schmidt. Otto Schmidt, I'm very excited about. The art looked very, very good. But, you know, basically the whole premise of this is, you know, Green Arrow and Black Canary are doing their adventuring and they're arguing over what, you know, how to help the city. And so Ollie takes her on a tour of the city to show all the shelters and all the things that he's opened, you know, to what he's trying to do. But then, you know, she's insinuating that there's more going on. So he goes back to his company and is looking in the books. And then the guy who he trusts turns out is betraying him.
It's Lucius Fox.
Yeah, exactly. And then they made a whole big deal about him, you know, taking care of his little sister and blah, blah, blah. And then turns out she's betraying him. Yeah. And it's just like, it felt the story wise felt too much like the stuff from Lemire's run.
Yes.
During the New 52. And I did not want that.
There's a lot here. I was hoping to sort of start off slower, more simple. And I don't mean in a bad way, but just sort of, you know, this is your clean the slate moment. Let's clean the slate.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's what's going to happen here. I don't know. If Oliver finds out his company is not doing quite the good he thinks it is. And
shocking. Shocking.
Very similar to what we've read in Batman books, too, by the way.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I did like it. It just wasn't – I was, you know, we both so much loved the last Rebirth issue. I thought for sure this is going to be like pick of the week contention. And it was a solid book, but –
I was so afraid you were gonna be like get all mad at me because I was disappointed.
No,
like,
no.
Yeah. Okay. So we're on the same page there.
But I also think this is because our expectations were really high after that Rebirth.
Yeah, they were.
Like if that had never happened, they just had launched with this. I would have been like, oh, this is interesting. I can get behind this. But the last one was so good.
Yep.
So we'll see.
All right, and then finally, Green Lantern's number one. Sam Humphries and Robson Rocha on art. This is picking up the Simon Baz and the new girl. I forget her name. Jessica Cruz,
right.
The new Green Lanterns. What did you think of this, Connor?
I liked it, but I'm still on the fence in the same way I was after the Rebirth.
Yep.
I kind of talk to myself as I read this because at first, so these two are partners protecting Earth's sector, despite the fact that they also have Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner and I assume John Stewart as well.
Yeah.
So it's very heavy on the cop metaphors, yep. So even to the point where they hold their wrists like they have guns. And at first I didn't like that, but then I thought, you know what? For years, I've been saying I just want Hal Jordan space cop stories, and that's basically what they're doing, so okay. Like, I had to remind myself of what I wanted. So this was fine. I just don't really care about the Red Lanterns.
Right.
Which is, the big thing here.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm going to keep with it because I really do want to read a Green Lantern book.
I'm on the fence.
I like the art a lot.
I had the same feeling coming out of I was more excited coming out of the Rebirth because I just liked what I saw and what was coming out of it. My enthusiasm went down a couple of notches. I'm still going to stick with it because I really like Sam as a writer. Yeah. And I just love the idea of the Green Lanterns and all stuff like that. But this didn't knock my socks off.
Yeah, I'm giving them a bit of a wide berth on a lot of these books because I want to return to a lot of these characters. So unless I really dislike something, I'm probably going to stick with it for a while. Or I don't know what for a while means. But this was fine. I wish the Red Lanterns weren't here. I just wish they were doing something else.
Right.
I just miss the days where they all wore the same costume.
Yeah, I know. They all have their own like identity, which I understand and I get, and I like the expressing themselves or whatnot. But like even with the thing is like what drives me, like I don't care about the costumes or so much, but like the whole Simon Baz thing, like. Like he's still dealing with being thought to be a terrorist. Like, right. you just need to move on from that. Like, I feel like there's all this baggage from the past 5 years
right.
that we were all understanding and agreeing didn't work, and so move on from it. You know, like don't. And I don't know.
I feel weird. Like being a space cop trumps federal authority.
Yeah, I feel like too. Yeah, exactly. So.
Or I feel like being on the Justice League, they can be like, okay, maybe you're not a terrorist.
Yeah. Ugh, gosh.
Yeah. So it was. I didn't dislike any of these books.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't. They weren't awful. I mean, if I had to rank them, I would probably. I mean, Batman and Superman, Green Arrow, Green Lanterns. Like that's the. Yeah. It's in that order. That's how I would give them. You know, in terms of the excitement.
I might swap Green Arrow and Superman, but yeah, basically.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, cool. Well, so those are the new number ones, and we are, endeavored to be covering DC Rebirth as in-depthly as possible, and that requires your support, and we want to thank everybody who's helped out supporting iFanboy.com. If you go to iFanboy.com/support, you can find a link there where you can shop on Amazon, where a little portion of your purchase doesn't come from you, comes from Amazon, and goes to us and helps to keep everything running, keeping all the servers running, keeping everything else that we need to keep this podcast coming to you on a weekly basis, as well as also supporting all of our movies and all the other fun stuff like that. And we want to thank everybody who has donated directly either through the iFanboy memberships or through a direct donation. There's a link there where you can donate any amount you want via PayPal. We want to thank everyone for that. And we're working on some things behind the scenes to kind of rejigger the ways you can support the iFanboy. So stay tuned for that. It should be interesting. But as always, without you, there wouldn't be a show. So we appreciate it.
And also, we're aware that the registration page is currently experiencing issues.
Yeah, so if you're looking to help out directly, go to that donate button. That's the best way you can do it right now directly. So
yeah, we had a technical issue that blew up our website in many ways. So
well, yeah, blew up is dramatic.
Well, you can't register and you can't make an account.
There's a wrench in this manner.
Yeah, all right. Let's move on to Civil War II, number two.
So you might have noticed that we talked about I Hate Fairyland, and then we talked about a whole bunch of DC books. Now we're going to talk about a whole bunch of Marvel books. So Civil War II, number two, written by Bendis with art by Dave Marquez. And as far as I'm concerned, for my money, the story on this event, quote unquote event, continues to be Dave Marquez.
Yes. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous
book.
It's
amazing. It's gorgeous. That said, story wise, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading it, and I'm it's fine. As you said, it's all about the Inhumans, and don't really care about them at the end of the day.
Yep,
it's bizarrely muted.
Yes,
the whole situation.
Yeah. So I mean, so basically, in a nutshell, if you're not reading it or if you're not aware of it, so last issue we saw Ulysses, the Inhuman who can see the future. Told Carol Danvers and a whole bunch of team to go fight Thanos, and War Machine died, and She-Hulk apparently is near death. And so Tony flipped out, and in this issue, he kidnaps that Inhuman and is trying to figure out how his power work. And while he does that, the Inhumans find out, and they go to attack Tony, and they go to the Stark Tower, and then Carol and everybody all find him. And then Ulysses goes, the Hulk's going to kill you all, and that's how it ends.
You've read as many Avengers books as I have, but yeah. I haven't read a lot lately in the last couple of years. Has Carol been this fascistic? Fascistic?
No, I don't know that she's been fascistic, but she's been – I mean, she's always been a military person, mm-hmm. and when she wasn't a drunk. With what's going on in Alpha Flight, she's now in a leadership position.
Right, but she – so Ulysses says, okay, sorry, the Hulk's going to kill you all. And then the final page teasers, you know, Carol showing up at Dr. Banner's secret lab in Utah and looking very angry.
Which, by the way, I feel bad because we get – it's just a one-page, three panels, and we get an establishing shot of his lab in Utah. And then we get a somewhat medium to close-up shot of him looking in his microscope, and he's kind of smiling.
He's just happy to do science.
He's just happy to do science. Just leave him alone to do science. And then you get angry Carol, and I feel bad for the guy. I don't know. The thing is that I feel as if they're putting a lot of weight on this schism, on this question.
Right.
As to whether or not the whole thing is, do you protect the future? Do you fight the future or save the future? Whatever the battle lines are, right?
Do you believe that the future is set?
Right.
That was the central. I mean, there are interesting things happening here. It just feels very oddly low key for a big event story. But
yeah. So Iron Man's side is to protect the future, and Carol's side is to change the future, right? But the thing is, I feel as if they're forcing that. They're forcing the hand of the weight of that positioning. Like, I don't feel as if this issue has any gravitas, mainly because it's based in Inhumans, who I don't care about. You know, like, I don't know. It's just weird. But the whole thing.
If you think back to Civil War, I mean, it did have that through line. You know, there was a reason. They did break up for a reason, the Avengers. And you know, there hasn't been that Captain America defies S.H.I.E.L.D. and escapes the helicarrier moment in this book.
Yeah, there has not.
That defines the conflict.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just semantics.
So now what we're going to have is we're going to have a parade of me bitching.
Oh.
Just to warn everybody. So there are several other – so as I'm scrolling through the Marvel books that are on sale this week, I see a whole bunch of them. Some have the Civil War II tie-in cover treatment. Some don't, mm-hmm. you know, and all this sort of stuff. And so just some quick hits here. So Civil War II, X-Men number one. Remember how in the original Civil War they're like, don't worry, the X-Men play a role.
Right.
And they didn't really play a role, right?
Right. Constantly teasing you.
Exactly. And then this time around, like, don't worry, the X-Men play a role. And so this is the X-Men playing their role in Civil War II. And essentially, all this was Magneto and his team going to Dubai, where there's a rich mutant who is apparently – so apparently the Terrigen Mist is a cloud that is just circling the globe.
Yes, it's just constantly circling the globe, yes.
Right?
They can't get a couple of big fans and blow
– Well, that's the thing. And so now the glow, now the cloud is on its way to Dubai, and this rich mutant has made an apartment that can withstand it. They're all safe there. And Magneto and his team go to try to get those mutants for whatever reason, but then Sentinels show up, and they blow up the apartment. And now the cloud is coming, and then Storm and her team come. And literally, Storm is using her wind to keep a cloud away. That was the big action moment, is that they were staying away from a cloud.
Well, that is...
It's sad. That's what it is. It's sad.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No, it makes no sense. It's so stupid.
It just doesn't. And it's weird. And I feel like...
This feels forced. This feels... not natural. This feels not elegant. It's just bad. It's just, and so Magneto is angry that Magneto blames the Inhumans for the Terrigen Mist and trying to kill all them again. So now it's pitting Magneto against the Inhumans, and Storm and her team are trying to say, no, we need to work with them. And it's a third angle to the Civil War thing mm-hmm. that is just pointless. That is just like, you know, I don't know. It's so dumb. So dumb. So then moving on from that. So International Iron Man is a book I've been enjoying.
Yes, I
right?
have
too. It's Bendis and Maleev or mm-hmm. Malev or whatever, you know, however you pronounce his name. And Maleev's art has been great. I was in the shop a couple of weeks ago and I showed somebody didn't believe it. I'm like, no, look, it's like
no, it's good
yeah.
Maleev. It's good Maleev.
It's good Maleev, yeah. And so this time it has the Civil War cover treatment on it. Now, did you read this issue, Connor?
Yes, I did.
Aside from one page that took place after the big battle in Civil War II, number one, with the Sentinel or the Celestial, did this issue have anything to do with Civil War?
No.
Thank you.
You know, we've talked about before how unless the covers really blows me away, I tend to just gloss over them because I don't have the physical issue in front of me.
Yes.
I completely forgot it had the undercover treatment, so it didn't really bother me because I just...
Oh, it drove me crazy because I was like, oh, they're dragging this into Civil War II or whatever. And then I literally read the book three times trying to map because it jumped around time so much.
that's sort of the classic comics thing. It's like, it's a tie-in. The first page is a tie-in, and the rest of the issue, the writer's like, can I get on with my story now?
Which really sucks, because this is a nice little story that I feel as if should not be related to what's going on in the world. Maybe because it's just because it's Iron Man. Right. They think it will spike sales or whatnot, but it's just dumb. It's just dumb. I mean, that said, the issue's good. I enjoy what's going on with this, although it is getting kind of redundant.
I don't want him to not be Howard Stark's kid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think they put a seed of doubt as to whether or not he actually isn't here. Yeah. But I don't want it to be the case. I think legacy is important, and the fact that he's part of this Marvel legacy of Howard, of the Stark family, is important.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Nova number 8.
I enjoyed Nova number 8 too. Now Nova number 8 is a book that I enjoyed it, but with an asterisk.
Okay.
It's a book that very much tied into Civil War number 2, as we see the whole big fight from Nova's point of view. We see Nova and Miles Morales at the party. You know, this party, which seems to be the seminal moment. Like, it's not so much the battle, it's the party at Tony's.
I love the party. it's kind of like, you know, when you're on a TV show or a movie, you live for the after party. It's getting through the battle to get to the after party is why we do this. And it was kind of funny that superheroes do that too, at least in this way. I like the party scene a lot. I like the fact that he's the new kid and no one really knows who he is. And didn't he used to be taller? Oh, you're different, Nova. And I like that bit. Although there's the scene when Steve is he's telling them to stay out of the kitchen and he's looking down at them. There's his face is drawn really weird.
Yes. Yeah. But so we get that, and then Nova comes home. And my only complaint about this Nova book is that I've been reading it since the get go, and it just seems like every two issues we get his mother saying, "I can't deal with this anymore." Like, they need to get past whatever this problem is.
Right.
You know, and I understand, like, being a teenager and sneaking in and out and trying to go to school or whatnot, but it's just like, as a Nova reader, I was just like, again, you know. And so then my only complaint about the rest of this issue is him sitting around waiting for Iron Man to be available to help him figuring out his helmet.
Right.
Which I felt like kind of was a waste. It was funny, but it was kind of a waste.
Well, who else is going to help him?
Sure, exactly. Well, I don't know, Reed Richards? Oh, wait, he's gone. God. Anyway, so then finally – Deadpool number 14 clearly is set in Civil War II, yet nothing on the cover.
Make up their mind.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's like nothing. The cover is Deadpool and the rest of his mercenaries playing cards, and they're all cheating. And it's a lovely cover. But then it like literally takes place during the big fight and at the party and all that sort of it's a mess. It's all a mess. But this had art by Mike Hawthorne, who's always great. And again, I do like the idea of, okay, you've got this event, you've got this big fight with the Celestial, and then you've got the party, and seeing all the different sides to, you know, like we saw Nova's side, now we see it from Deadpool's point of view. And also, this book had a really, really good gag. Basically, all the mercenaries that Deadpool hired are sick of Deadpool treating them like crap, and so they're going to form their own company, but they have no money. And Cable happens to be hanging around, and Cable just walks into the room holding bundles of money. And they're like, "What do you do?" And he's like, "What, you haven't seen money before?" And they're like, "What?" And he explains that I burned through tons of cash, but I'm not bad at financial planning. And he goes back in time, and there's actually panels of Cable in a top hat and a tuxedo and a horse and carriage going into a bank. And basically he's explaining how Cable's been able to bankroll everything he does over all these years, which is hysterical.
That's good.
So good job, Jerry Duggan. I like that.
I think it's interesting that both you and Josh have come around to becoming huge Deadpool fans.
Well, I don't know. I mean, huge is a leap there, my friend.
All right, solid Deadpool fan.
Solid Deadpool fan. I mean, partially I think it's because I'm a big Jerry Duggan fan, and I like to see what he's doing with it, and he's doing some great stuff with it. And Mike Hawthorne on art doesn't hurt, and you know, like it's been good. Yeah, so I've come around to it. I've come around.
All right.
Well, I'll admit.
Finish off with Star Wars Corner.
Yes.
We got a new Star Wars book.
Yeah, so Han Solo number 1 from Marjorie Liu and Mark Brooks. you didn't read this, did you?
No.
Okay, yeah, you're probably better off not, because there are two problems with this book.
Yeah.
One is that this definitely falls into your area of I don't want to know this stuff.
Right.
You know, and so basically this takes place between after A New Hope, before Empire.
Yeah.
And Han is off trying to earn money to pay off the mark. He's trying to pay back Jabba.
Pay Jabba back.
And so he's left the rebellion, and now Leia pulls him back in because they have a mission that they need. They need the Falcon. And at first, they don't even want Han or Chewie because they want to enter the Falcon into this into a space race.
Space race.
Yeah, space race. And Han says, nobody flies it but me. So now Han and Chewie are in this, you know, stakes are high space race. Wacky races in space.
There you go.
But so it definitely falls in that area of this is the kind of stories that you don't want to read, you know?
Well, I mean, that's – I would disagree. I mean, if you're going to do those stories, do Han and Chewie in a wacky space race, I don't want to know about Han's family. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what I don't want to know. I don't want to know important stuff. Like,
yeah, well, tying it into the paying off Jabba and all that sort of stuff, like just do it as a story. This is a story that's happening. You know, like don't tie it in. Don't make it make sense in the continuity. I guess that's my point. But
well, you still need a reason why they're in the space race. So I'm just going to do
right, true. Fun. That's true.
I actually don't agree, but I just, okay. maybe you just didn't like the story. That's also fine.
Well, yeah, no, but well, then the second problem is that so the Falcon they get to the race and all the ships are all there and it's very intimidating and Chewie growls and Han says no, I'm not nervous, and then he looks at Chewie and says, we've got this.
Ugh.
And that's when I went, oh, God damn it.
I know. It's a plague.
Yes, it is a plague.
It was in at least 4 or 5 books I read this week.
I saw it at least in 2 other spots, too. Yeah.
I remember way back when the New 52 started, and it was in seemingly every issue of the New 52. Some variation of I got this, we got this, you got this. And I really, at the time, we were still doing articles. I was going to do an article about it, and I just didn't have the time for something to happen because it was going to be very labor intensive to go through every issue and find it and cut it out. And
you didn't have this.
I didn't do it, and I feel bad because I feel like it'd be very, you know, prescient right now because it's still in every goddamn comic.
No, it's funny because Josh is the one who pointed out to me, which is that the phrase "I got this" or "we got this" is a crutch now that many writers are using.
Yep.
And I pointed out to the guy who owns the store that I shop at, and like 2 weeks later, I came in and he's like, "Thank you for ruining my comic reading."
Yeah, it's in every goddamn comic.
It's in every comic. Yes, it was
in Green Lanterns this week. It was in a bunch of books.
And I'm sorry, Han Solo doesn't say "we got this." It just doesn't.
I was looking at the preview while you were talking. I do like the all red variant cover.
Oh yeah, the all red variant was awesome. Yeah, and so then finally, also Star Wars number 20 came out, and this is the next chapter of the Mike Mayhew drawn in between arc story of Obi-Wan on Tatooine.
Okay.
And the only reason why I wanted to highlight this was because apparently Obi-Wan spends his time in a herd of banthas, and he has them all named. And at the end of and so he fights the Wookiee bounty hunter in this, and it's very action packed. And Luke flies the Skyhopper. And hits all those notes, but for me, it was at the very end of it when Obi-Wan returns to the Banthas, and he goes, "Hello, Nara. You're looking well today. What's the matter, Dolo? Why so sad?" And like, oh, Obi-Wan hangs with Bantha.
He's turned into a crazy old man. A crazy old man.
Yeah, pretty much. I have no idea who the artist is in the next arc. The single page teaser for the next issue is like a very propaganda-y shot of stormtroopers, so I'm very excited.
Crazy old wizard.
He's a crazy old wizard. All right. Well, those are the books that we read this week that we enjoyed or didn't enjoy. And there was a lot of books. I mean, Spidey number 7 was great. I oddly enjoyed Vote Loki number 1 this week. You know, like
what is that book?
It's basically Loki running for president, and it has nothing to do with anything else in the Marvel universe. And like half the issue, basically, what happens is that they, you know, there's a Trump and Clinton like, but they never say them, and Loki is posing as a reporter because he's taking in the humans, and then he gets exposed, and then of course the press runs with it and they said, "Are you running for president?" He's like, "I'm not running for president." And then the twist is that this carnation of Loki was actually born in the United States, and so he is eligible, and then he decides to run for president. And so
all right, I just looked while you were talking, Star Wars 21, the cover you loved.
Yeah.
David Aja.
Oh, he's not the artist on it.
No, our interior art by Jorge Molina.
Oh man, what a tease.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
All right, there you go. Let's do an email since we haven't
done this in a while. Let's do an email. It's been a while. Yeah, why don't you read it, Connor?
All right, Peter from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada says, "Given how there's always lots of talk about how comics as an industry, specifically meaning the big two, is not as big as it once was at its peak and such, I started thinking about Image. Given how it's a fairly new company compared to that of Marvel or DC, it seems to be getting more popular all the time. I'm sure this is partly due to the prevalence of TV and movie people scouring the comic world for a thing they can turn into a film, but for Image as a company, I have to think it's going pretty okay for them. Which brings me to my questions. So number 1, When Image launched, much before I was reading comics, was there ever any sense that, oh yes, for sure, this will be a company number three for sure, or was it just another small indie with some big names behind it? And number two, if you had to bet some money, here's your crystal ball, do you think there's any other room for another company to get to Image size, levels of quality, and success? Does that company exist already, or has it not shown up yet?
All right, so question number one is when we get to be old man comics.
Yeah. When we were kids, Image was the number two company in the comics.
But no, to answer your question, when Image launched, it was definitely oh yes.
Well, it was number it beat DC when it launched.
Yeah.
It had a higher market share than DC did.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was the top talent in the industry forming their own company. It was all everyone was talking about. They were the hottest books.
Those books sold millions of copies when they came out. It blew up the industry when it came out because it threw everything on its head.
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely was an immediate take notice. It was a paradigm shift for the whole industry.
Now, that market share didn't sustain itself because the books didn't come out. But for a while, I can only imagine what it was like in the DC offices when they dropped to number three.
Yeah.
Talk about it being bad now. It was probably a bad month at DC.
Right. Yeah. For a while, Image was able to knock DC down. It didn't sustain, but they were firmly ensconced as, you know, one of the top companies.
Yep.
Then they failed to ship. They had infighting. They had problems. And for a while, Image was below Dark Horse. You know, it dropped, and you know, and a lot of the work over the past 10 years have helped build it back up. You know, but it's Image has never been able to attain the success that it had when it first launched, and even now, like, yes, you're right. There's been a ton of. I was just having lunch actually with a comic pro, with a writer this week, and we were talking about it. He was saying to me, he's just like, oh yeah, no, the whole Image boom in the past couple of years is over. He's like, the numbers are dropping. Everybody's talking about it. Yeah, like
the last sales report. And you know, when you were last there, it was at just on the door 10%, and now it's back down to 8 and 7.
Yeah, yeah. Like the high point when I was there was 12 and change, which I busted my ass to get to. And I'm not saying there's no connection between the two or whatnot. I think that a lot of it is the. I mean, even if I was there, I bet you the numbers.
No, would be the same.
Yeah.
I think the luster of the original books is off. I think the strategy, which I get practically, the strategy of taking months off between arcs is the problem.
Yeah.
I think you probably see way less sales when the books come back.
Yep, you do. Yep.
And there's only so many big names in comics right now.
Yeah, and the thing is that a lot of the, you know, you get a huge launch and excitement around it, but the books are challenging to sustain, and they're dropping at a faster rate than previously. So whereas a book would launch at one and sustain over an arc or two, you're seeing by issue four them dropping precipitously, which is dangerous, which is a problem, you know. But if they get a movie deal out of it or a TV deal out of it, or they get the trades out, you know, a lot of what Image doing now is focusing on the book trade, which I think is smart, which is something that I helped, you know, usher in as well too, because the opportunities there. But so to get to your second question, do we think there's any room for another company, and does that company exist or hasn't blown up yet? I would imagine the folks at Valiant or Aftershock or Black Mask or Dark Horse or IDW would disagree with me, but my answer to this is no.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think that the comics industry we have is the comics industry that we get, is the comics industry that we're going to have.
It's pretty much been set for 20 years.
Yeah, you can't do it.
There hasn't been a major player since Image came on in the early 90s. And it's pretty much the company this is it. This is the comics industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's too ingrained. You know, Marvel and DC are still combined 70% of the market.
Well, I think that it's too ingrained. They're too big.
Yeah.
I mean, having Disney and Warner Brothers behind you, you just cannot compete with that.
Anybody comes in, they just flood the market with more books.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from a business standpoint or a sales standpoint, look at what Marvel and DC do. Look at all the variants. Look at all this stuff. And a big problem also is the direct market and the retail positioning. Is that the retailers? It's a weird balancing act. It's a weird seesaw because the retailers. Okay, so let's say Connor, you own a comic book store. Okay,
ooh.
I just gave you my comic book store.
Oh man!
All right. I'm
screwed.
So you have $1,000 to spend each week on books you're going to order.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got $1,000. Okay, and you add up all of the Marvel and DC books that you need to stock Batman, you need to stock Superman, you need Civil War, right? You need all that stuff, right? Now you're left with $200.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So then you've got to make choices. What Image books do you get? What Dark Horse books do you get? What IDW books do you get? And the market is flooded right now, and retailers only have so many dollars they can spend, so they can't order everything. So you can't take a risk on a really good Aftershock book. because you don't know anything about that company. You might know the creators on it, but you don't know if it's going to sell. You don't know if any of your customers want it. Nobody pre-ordered it. So do you order it?
Can I spend the money on Magic the Gathering cards?
Well, that's probably might get you more money than the comics would.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough, and it's just this is it.
And then that's not even talking about all the incentives and all the sales deals and things like that. Where like Marvel will do something where like Civil War II and blah blah, you can get this 1 in 250 black and white variant, but you've got to order 600 copies of all these other comics combined. I talked to retailers when I worked at Image, and this exists around the country. I think more than anyone wants to admit, there are retailers with boxes and boxes
of unsold comics
in order to get variants, boxes of Avengers vs. X-Men in order to get that variant. As much as I want to applaud,
it's like vinyl.
Yes. Well, yeah, it is actually the TV show, the underreporting of record sales or what they were doing. They were juggling with the numbers. Yeah,
they were buying the extra copies themselves and hiding them in warehouses.
Right. That's
to
it.
To pump their sales numbers up. Anyway.
But as much as I want to support and applaud and celebrate the work of an Aftershock or a Black Mask or any of those kind of Valiant of those upstarts, you can't penetrate this market. You just can't.
Yeah, I don't even think you could recreate Image now. Like I'm trying to think. I don't think there's any creators of the stature that those guys were at that time.
It's funny because I was wondering about this because it's like Bendis, Brubaker, all these guys, they had such personality. And like they were creators you got behind, you couldn't wait to hear them in interviews and things like that. And nothing against the creators of the world now, but it just I don't know if it's just because we're older and we're jaded or whatever, but it just doesn't feel as exciting as it did even 10 years ago.
Possibly, but there's just no one like think about it. So Brubaker, Hickman, Fraction, those were three of the top Marvel writers, and they all left Marvel to do Image books. That didn't shake up the industry,
right?
If Bendis left now to do Image book, that wouldn't shake up the industry.
Nope. Yeah.
It's not like it was back then where all of the top talent left at the same time to do these Image books and it blew everybody up.
Yeah.
The characters are now bigger than the creators.
Yep.
I mean, they always have been, but at that time, the creators were bigger than the characters were.
Yeah.
In that moment in time. And it wouldn't happen now.
Yeah, it's upsetting. I mean, because we really I like that when we started the podcast, it was very much I read a book because Brubaker was doing it.
Yeah.
And now and there's still that to a certain degree, but books don't sell based on the creator names anymore, and that's unfortunate. So, yeah.
Thanks for your question, Peter. If you have any questions or comments you want to get on the conversation on the show, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from. Peter didn't tell us how long he's been thinking about the question, but we'll let it slide.
Yeah. Next time, please let us know.
Yeah.
Go to ifanboy.com when you can find that we've put out other podcasts as well.
Yes.
It's been, we're in summer movie season, and we gave our movie reviews of X-Men Apocalypse, of Captain America Civil War, and we couldn't ignore Warcraft the movie. So if you go back, this was published underneath last week's episode in the feed, so you might have missed it if you were set to auto download. So go back and look in the feed or go to ifanboy.com. If you're into Warcraft, if you're into World of Warcraft, if you're into the movie Warcraft, if you're just into me, Connor, and Mike Romo talking about movies and really having some existential crises around the movies we like, go back and listen to that. It was a lot of fun to talk about. So
this movie was a big topic of conversation at E3 this week.
Yeah.
And also here in Hollywood too, because it bombed here, but it's blowing up China.
It sure is.
So you might actually get your second part, Ron, of this movie.
I would gladly
thank your Chinese brothers for that.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier in the show, Josh resurrected our Talksplode show, which is our creator interview show, and he talked to Tom King and Mitch Gerads. They are the creative team behind The Sheriff of Babylon, but they also talked about a lot about process and how they work together and how they work with other people, how Tom King broke into comics. You probably know he was in the CIA, but he talks about that in depth. Both careers we had a little bit to do with.
A little bit. Just a little.
A tiny bit.
They had much more than we did. I mean, they actually did.
I didn't say 90%. I would say we're 0.05.
Yeah.
But Tom King discovered Mitch Gerads through our Spotlight article on his art.
Yep.
And then Tom King, a member of the iFan base. His very first comic script he ever wrote was for a contest we did.
And we're very proud of that.
So we will expect our 5%, Tom.
Yes.
From all future earnings.
We get a cut.
Great interviews. Go listen to those. And also, as I mentioned, also go listen to O Comics' interview with Tom King that our old buddy Paul Montgomery did. But together, those are two good shows to listen to. Finally.
finally, if you can't get enough of us and our babbling, we did a whole podcast that began and ended.
It was weird.
About the movie Goodfellas.
It ended. It was weird.
Yeah, Goodfellas Minute. It's all there. If you go to goodfellasminute.com, you can subscribe to the show. You can go back and listen to it. It's really interesting. I was looking at the numbers. We're getting a steady download. There are people still listening to it, which is great. And so we appreciate everybody who did that. If you haven't yet, I know we talked about it every week, but go check out goodfellasminute.com. We're really proud of it, and we really enjoy doing it. And so we want you to partake in it, especially if you – a lot of people listen to the show because they seem to like our banter, and there's a lot of banter in that podcast. So there you go.
I do miss talking about New York City parkways.
I do too.
Let's introduce a segment on that.
Especially this week of driving around on them.
Head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show, talk about this week's book, so you can find the other podcasts we just mentioned over at iFanboy.com. And we have a lot of special edition shows this summer. You can find them all there. You can follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's how you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And individually, you can find us at J.A. Flanagan. Maybe you can tell us where he is or why he's not on the show if you follow him. At C.S. Kilpatrick is mine, and at RonXO is Ron's.
Listen, I just want to be clear. We're not saying Josh is missing.
No, I just don't know why he's not on the show.
But we don't know where he is, so so there you go. Finally, if you enjoy the show, if you like what we do, tell your friends about it. Go to the comic book store. Spread the word. Let everyone know about iFanboy. Just write iFanboy.com on Sharpie, on trains. Just anything you do like that. Grassroots. We enjoy
it. Or put it in a bottle, like a note in a bottle.
Exactly. Or you can go to iTunes and write a review of the show. That helps people discover it. Or on any other platform that you absorb this podcast from. If there's any way to share your opinion of it, please do. We appreciate everybody who does it. That's going to wrap it up for this week. As always, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. And then I guess that's it.
That's all we can do.
So it's over.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.